Driving back, as the sun gradually found its way out again, she decided to try to find Bobby's factory, if only to put him on her map in a different way. It shouldn't be hard. Her body, she was finding, remembered Los Angeles much more thoroughly than her head did. Eventually, she found herself back on Romaine, looking for the turn Alberto had taken, for those white-painted walls. She found it, turned, and saw something big and bright and whiter still just pulling away. She slowed, pulled over, watched the long white truck turn, swinging right, out of sight at the far corner. She didn't know trucks, but she guessed this one was as long as they got without having the back end become a separate trailer, but big enough to move the contents of a two-bedroom house. Unmarked, shiny, white, and gone. "Shit," she said, pulling up where Alberto had pulled up. She could see the green-painted metal door they'd entered through. She didn't like the diagonal of shadow across it now. The sun was high, and that diagonal meant the door was open, 3 inches or more. For the first time, she saw the long, white-painted, horizontally corrugated doors of a loading bay. Back a truck up to that, and take out anything you wanted. She popped the trunk, getting out with her power book over her shoulder and the carton in her arms. She put these in the trunk and closed it, retrieved her purse, clicked the transponder to lock the car, then squared her shoulders and walked over to the green door. As she'd assumed, it was standing open a few inches. On darkness, she decided, tipping her head to squint inside over her sunglasses. She dug through the smaller objects at the bottom of her purse, coming up with a flat little LED light on a key ring whose only keys were for the commercial mailbox she no longer rented and for a club to secure a car she no longer owned. She squeezed the light between thumb and forefinger, expecting its battery to be dead, but no, it was working. Feeling stupid, she gave the green door a rap, hurting her knuckles. It was heavy and didn't move when knocked on.
"Bobby? Hello? It's Hollis Henry, Bobby."
She put her left hand flat on the door and pushed. It swung smoothly, but very slowly. With the LED in her right hand, she pulled off her sunglasses with the other and stepped into darkness. The LED did little in terms of increased visibility. She turned it off and stood, waiting for her eyes to accommodate. She began to make out points and small, faint beams in the distance. Flaws in the painting of blacked-out windows, she guessed.
"Bobby, it's Hollis. Where are you?"
She tried the LED again, this time pointing it at the floor. Surprisingly bright, it illuminated a length of one of Bobby's powdered white grid lines. Broken, she saw, with the partial print of one of his Winkle-Picker Keds clones.
"Whoa," she said. "Nancy Drew."
"Bobby, where are you?"
She brought the LED around in a slow arc, level with her waist, faintly making out a panel of switches. She crossed to them and tried one. Behind her, overhead, several of the big halogens came on. She turned and saw, not unexpectedly now, the field-like floor, empty save for Bobby's GPS grid drawn in flour, churned and partially erased like chalk on a blackboard, where the table, chairs, and computers had been removed. She moved forward, stepping carefully, trying to avoid the white powder. There seemed to be a variety of prints, and quite a few of Bobby's, or someone else's, wearing those same ridiculous shoes, which seemed unlikely. There were beige filter tips, too, smoked down short and mashed flat against the concrete. Without picking one up, she knew that they'd be Marlboro. She looked up at the lights, then back down at the prints and butts.
"Bobby did a runner," she said, recalling an expression of inchmails.
Someone had removed the safety orange outline of Archie the Squid. She went out, avoiding touching the partially open green door. She got her computer out of its case in the trunk, powered it up, and while it booted, removed the Blue Ant helmet from its carton. With her right arm through the skeletal helmet and the power book under her left, she closed the trunk and re-entered the building. She opened the power book and checked to see if that wireless network 72FOFHOOAV, the one she'd accessed here before, had gone with Bobby. It had, but she'd expected that. She closed the laptop, tucking it under one arm as she fumbled to power up the helmet and put it on. Archie was gone. But the shipping container was still there, something glowing at its center through wireframe. She took a step forward, and it vanished. She heard a soft voice behind her, syllables not in English. She started to turn, then remembered to remove the helmet first. A couple stood in the doorway, backlit by the sun. They were small people. The male held a broad-headed push broom.
Hola,
he said. Hello? Walking toward them. I'm glad you're here. I'm just leaving. You can see they've left a mess. Gesturing behind her with the arm she'd again thrust through the helmet. The man said something in Spanish, gently but questioning, as she stepped past them. Goodbye, she said, not looking back. A careworn silver-gray Econoline was parked beside the rented Passat. She used the transponder as she walked up to the car, quickly opening the door, getting in, helmet on the passenger seat, power book on the floor, key in the ignition, pulling away, the dented rear doors of the Econoline in the mirror now. And then she was accelerating along Romaine.